I guess I'm okay. I spent a good part of the day out in the boat and it was pretty rough.
Oh,
But
yeah?
that's my fault, though.
Waves are choppy?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was pretty much so. It was, wasn't going out. I went down, well, you don't know. You know where Emerald Coast Marine is in NISO?
Yes, sir. Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah, so we live right next door to that. So I went from there all the way down to LaGrange Bayou. Way, because way back up in there, you know, you go under the Midway Bridge and then
uh-huh.
you go for a while. Anyway, it's like going back 100 years in time. It's just,
yeah,
it's just crazy. So anyway, so you want to interview me about Vietnam?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's all right with you. Yep.
Well, sure. Now I'm,
what was I going to say? I really appreciate you taking the time to let me call you.
No, it's, you know, I'm glad to share the experience. You know, kind of give you a little background on this.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah. I was curious, like, where you grew up and
sure.
What your life was like before you got involved with the military. I'm not sure if you volunteered or you were drafted or what happened. But...
No, I was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now,
okay, yes, sir.
Something, are you recording this?
Yes, sir, I am. Is that all right? I can.
No,
if you
no, it's fine. I was going to suggest that you do. I don't know if I had, if I were doing it, I'd use GarageBand or something to do it. But that's fine. That makes it a little easier. But yeah, I was.
Yes, sir.
Born
so
and
I can
raised.
Remember it all.
Yeah. That's, well, I was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio.
Okay.
And, I had a real stable upbringing, lived in the same place all through my high school years, and
yeah,
had good parents. They made me toe the line, but they were good. And I had a younger brother. He's 4 years younger than I am. He is also a Vietnam vet.
Oh, okay.
That unfortunately he passed away a couple of years ago. But then I applied to go to the Air Force Academy, and unbeknownst to me, they accepted me.
Yeah, I mean,
it was crazy. I was actually looking to play football, but
oh wow.
That didn't turn out that good, but I was also a high school gymnast, and so
okay.
I pursued that, and I was okay. I mean, our team was always in the top 20 teams in the country, which is remarkable because
yeah,
really most of the people didn't have any experience, and we had a really great coach. He was a Japanese American. And he would have been in the Olympics except he sustained a shoulder injury and that kept him out. But
yeah.
Anyway, so I went to the Air Force Academy, and when we got out, we all back in those days everybody wanted to fly airplanes, so.
Uh-huh.
I went to Reese Air Force Base. Reese is closed now, but it was in Lubbock, Texas, or outside Lubbock.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, anyway, that's kind of where I learned to fly. And
yeah,
almost all my classmates back in those days, we all wanted to fly airplanes, and that's pretty much like what we did. And
yes,
that's
sir.
Really notable. People, a guy that was in my squadron at the academy, he flew F-4s, and he flew 285 missions in North Vietnam.
Wow.
Wow. So he was really a good combat pilot.
Yes, sir.
But I flew C-123s in Vietnam, which is search for it on Google and you'll see what it looks
sir,
like.
Yes, sir. They're transport planes, aren't they?
Yeah. It's an old piston pounder. A pounder.
Yes, sir.
There aren't many people alive today have flown R-2800 engines that belch smoke and backfire. So, anyway, that's what I did for a year in Vietnam, and I flew all over the country.
I was curious, could I ask you a bit about your pilot training? Like kind of what that involved, you know, like.
Yeah, sure. Pilot training was in two phases back then. It was the primary phase was in T-37s, and we had no previous. None of us had any flying experience. If we did,
yes,
it was
sir.
Just by accident. Today, there's training and all that sort of stuff, but we never. You know, the first time I flew an airplane was in a jet, and so. And after my sixth ride was I was up solo.
Oh wow! Just okay. So they had you ride along for a few
yeah,
rides.
I had an instructor pilot.
Yes, sir. Okay.
And he flew with me the first five missions, and then the sixth one. Let's see. I remember we took off and we flew a couple of trips around the pattern, landed.
Yes,
he jumped out of the airplane, and I went out and was on my own. So,
wow.
So
and I'm guessing
that curriculum from that point on was some was with an instructor, some you were by yourself. And, the kind of progress through, you learn basic flying skills and acrobatics and formation flying, and then instrument flying. And so the first 6 months, I flew T-37s, and the last 6 months, I flew T-38s. And that airplane is still flown today, believe it or not.
Oh wow!
But,
so the I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's a great airplane to fly. Everybody called it a white rocket, and it had two engines in it, and you took off and stroked the burners, and the thing climbed straight up. And I've had I was by myself one day, and I went up and got up to like 55,000 feet. Which
wow,
you're not supposed to do without a pressure.
Yeah, what was the ceiling? What was the ceiling they gave y'all? You know, did they give y'all like a certain point you weren't supposed to go past or anything like that without the suit?
Yeah, 49,000 feet.
Oh okay.
Yeah. So
yeah, were those a lot smaller? I'm guessing those were a whole lot smaller than the what was it again? The C
the T-38.
Yes, sir.
You see them flying around here once in a while. NASA uses them, and
okay.
I don't know what else they're used for today, but they're not a Air Force training aircraft anymore.
Yeah, I'm guessing was it a lot different to get used to flying the bigger aircraft, you know, in Vietnam, the transport that you flew?
Well, yes. The C-123 had big reciprocating engines, and that's a different animal altogether. First of all, in the jet, you just push the throttle forward and you go. And
yes, sir.
That big reciprocating engine, you have throttles, you have mixtures, and you have prop levers. and you have to work all those in the right order. So if you're going to add power, for example, for takeoff, okay, you're going to take off at max power.
Uh-huh.
So the prop levers have to be full forward, which what that meant was it would give you up to 2,800 RPM. And the mixtures needed to be full forward because you didn't want to modulate the mixture through the carburetor. So you wanted as much gas as you can get. And then we had water injection. So you'd push these little buttons that would inject.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it injected water into the cylinders.
Yeah, to cool it off?
Cool it off, exactly.
Yeah, and okay.
You get another couple inches of torque out of it that way. So anyway, everything had to be in the right order. So when you got up to cruise, you wanted to bring the RPM back. You had to bring the throttles back and then the RPM uh-huh. back. And
just kind of level it out.
Yeah. And then you take the mixtures and you lean the engine out. So the way you did that is you just pull the mixture lever back until you saw a rise in the torque.
Okay.
And then it dropped off a pound or two. That's where you wanted it. So you're getting more miles per gallon in that arrangement.
Yeah.
Anyway, you don't need all those technical deals, but it was interesting flying. I landed in shortest airfield I landed in was 1,700 feet, and
wow,
and this is a 42,000 pound airplane, so it's pretty big. And I mean, but by today's standards, it's not. But anyway, it was.
What was you said 1,700 feet?
Yeah,
the shortest
runway I've been in. And we went off the side of the runway because the steering cable broke. So
we were
out in the Special Forces camp, and we called our headquarters, and they sent another airplane out and dropped the steering cable. And we fixed it on the spot and got out of there.
Yeah.
The Special Forces guys didn't like our airplanes overnight because they were mortar bank magnets. They were all trying to destroy
the
at the same time. So
yeah.
Anyway, so anyway, that was kind of the deal. I had one runway to go through every now and then. It was 2,000 feet long, and it had a 400 foot drop off on all four sides. Now, when I say that's true.
Wow.
There was halfway down the runway, there was a turnaround place where you could pull aircraft in and offload the cargo, and then to the end of the runway and take off. So,
yes, sir. Where was that? Where was that in that air? That runway, that airstrip.
Well, the name of the town that was, back in those days, there really wasn't much of a town, but it was called Giannia. You can go map of Vietnam today and find Giannia. That airfield, I have not been able to find it. I think they probably did away with it. And Giannia is a much bigger town now. So
I'm
sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yes, sir. I was curious how old you were when you initially went to Vietnam, and how if you, because you said you attended the Air Force Academy, and then you were at the air base in Texas, right?
Yeah, I was at Reese, and when I graduated from Reese, I went to Dover, Delaware, and that's where I flew the C-141. I had a little diversion to Tinker Air Force Base, which was at that time where the C-141 training was, and then I flew out of Dover in a C-141 for a year. Then I went to Hurlburt to get checked out in the 123, and by May of 67, I was in Vietnam.
Oh, wow.
123. So I did that for a year and came back and got requalified to 141 and went to Charleston.
Okay.
Base, South Carolina, and flew.
Yeah. Wow, yep. you've been all over. That's really cool.
Flew there from 1968 to 1971.
At Charleston.
And those 4 years of flying a 141, I got 3,000 hours in the airplane.
Which, oh, wow.
You know, what we were flying hard. I mean, it was all in the Vietnam era, so we were flying from Charleston. Typically, we'd go from Charleston to McGuire and get a load, and then go to Elmendorf, and then go to Yokota, Japan, and then from there to Tonsonut in Vietnam and back. And
oh, so you continued to fly missions that went into Vietnam even after you're no longer stationed there.
Yeah, and Tonsonut was in Saigon, which today is Ho Chi Minh City, but it was a commercial airport as well as a military field, and then the other locations were a couple of airfields in Thailand.
Wow, okay.
Well, the course of that whole adventure was I flew all over Southeast Asia in a C-141. So,
yes, sir. Which aircraft did you prefer?
Well, I guess the C-123 was the most fun to fly, but I got about 1,100 hours in the 123. I've got 2,000 hours in the C-130, and
okay.
3,000 hours in the C-141, and then little bits of pieces at different airplanes. I've flown MH-60 and MH-53 helicopters.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I did that a little bit. Well, when I was the commander of Air Force Special Operations Command, we were flying those two helicopters, and I needed to be able to fly them. So I went out to Kirtland Air Force Base and learned to fly them. So.
Yes, sir. Wow. So with the C-123, that was what you flew during 67, right? During the Tet Offensive, right?
That's true. I can remember that ever so clearly. I was at Nha Trang Air Base. Okay. Uh-huh. And at the end of the day, and I was getting ready to return a Than Rang, which was where our wing was at that time. And I got a call that says, you have an emergency load to take down to a place called Phan Thiet. Okay, that was an Army airfield.
Okay.
And what had happened is Tet had started it actually started the night before, but it rolled. It didn't start everywhere in the country. It started up in the northern part of the country and rolled south. So it took a 24-hour period for it to really come to fruition. So
you said it took a 24-hour period?
Yeah, it didn't just start everywhere all at once. It started up in the northern part of the country and spread southward.
Okay,
and actually, if you can get a hold, you can get a map of Vietnam easy enough, and all this make more sense. But so any event, Metrang, I said, you got to, they're out of electrical power. The bad guys had blown all their generating capacity up, except for they had enough to light one side of the runway. There's a 4,000 foot runway, which was plenty of runway for us. That was no problem. But the only thing is, they couldn't tell me what side of the runway was lit. So,
oh no.
Yeah. So anyway, off we go, and so as I approached Tan Thiet, there was tracers going up and down the beach, and I got on downwind, and I was
tracer
knocking.
Rounds.
Part. Yeah. They were tracers.
Were they firing it? Were they firing at you? Or were they?
No. I don't know. Yeah, I had the airplane blacked out, so they probably didn't even know I was there.
Oh, yes, sir. Uh-huh.
And I don't know who was shooting who. They were red tracers, and I think those were from the good guys.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm not sure the bad guys had tracers. But nevertheless, there was a little battle going on there. So I got on downwind and turned base and final and then just before, probably about a quarter of a mile or less out, I flashed my landing light so I could see see which side to line up on the land. So anyway, I landed. It was not eventful. But that was the beginning of Tet then for me. And then I took off from there and I had to go to Saigon. To Tom Sanute to get gas.
Okay.
Or could make it up the coast of Phan Rang. So you go into Saigon, and Saigon's, except for the runway lights, the whole complex, this is a big airfield, it was all blacked out. And so we taxied in, and I had four people on the crew. Each of us took an M16 and one was off the nose, one off each wingtip, one off the tail, and we provided our own security while the refueler came in and refueled aircraft. So,
were you engaged in combat? Like, did anything happen or?
No.
Were you fortunate enough to just get gas and get on your way?
That's what we did.
Yes,
and
that's good.
I mean, there was fighting going on in the airfield, but they never found me. So
yes, sir, that's good.
And I mean, it wasn't that big a deal, really. So anyway, we took off and made it back to the home field, and everything was okay. But that was a. So Tet was a kind of a, for the war in Vietnam, Tet was a big deal.
And, yes, sir.
Then I'm trying to think. That was in, it was in January 1968. And, about 10 days later, I found myself flying in a battle of Quezon.
Oh, wow. And, How old were you at the time, Tet and Quezon?
26.
Okay.
So You know, Quezon was a Marine outpost. They had, I think, 6,800 Marines that were holding off two battalions. No, is that right? Two North Vietnamese divisions.
Oh, wow.
They had the terrain. It was in their favor, and it wasn't just at the airfield. They had Hill 881 North, 881 South that they occupied. And so, anyway, these were daytime missions in the Quezon. And what I didn't realize until after all this happened is that they were shooting from Laos in the Quezon. I just never thought of it. Didn't realize that.
They were shooting what in the Quezon?
Well, they were probably 155 millimeter.
Artillery.
Yeah. And then there was a ridgeline north of Quezon, parallel to the runway, but it was probably a mile north of the runway. And that was occupied by the Vietnamese. And they could see when we landed, and then they'd start lobbing these mortars in on the field.
Yes, sir.
And I'm convinced that they had the field laid out in grid squares so that, because it wasn't an accident, but these daggone mortar rounds just kept following me. And
they had it sighted. You think they had it sighted?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I'm certain that they did.
Yes,
and
sir.
I had, the first time I went in there, my load was 8,000 pounds of HE rocket heads.
Oh,
and
no.
If that would have gotten hit, it would have been a bad day.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
But yeah, we went through the offload area slowly and offloaded the load. And then I took on as many Marines as I could, get on board without stopping, turned around,
yes,
took
sir.
Off opposite direction. So,
Wow. Yeah. Under fire and everything.
Yeah. Well, the mortars were there.
Yes, sir.
The thing about it is you don't know when you're getting shot at most of the time unless you get hit. And even then, I've, to my knowledge, I only got hit twice in the whole year I was over there.
Really?
Yeah. But I was I guess I'll put it this way. I was a reckless pilot. And so they had a hard time. They had a hard time tracking me, or they thought I was going to crash and burn anyway and didn't want to waste any ammo.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah. But, I'm being a little bit glib, but I was really good at flying that airplane, so I could do things with it that a lot of pilots couldn't do so.
Yeah.
I went in there four times, and one time I had to stay on the ground a long time because I had.
Is this Quezon four times?
Yeah.
Yes, sir. I'm just trying to keep everything straight.
yeah. It was. From the period of January to early April of 1968,
yes,
I had to go on a Quezon four times. So it's not that big a deal, really, except that we lost 10 aircraft in that little operation.
Oh, wow.
And of the 10 aircraft, we lost 5 crews.
Okay. The other crews were able to parachute out or to land successfully or whatever?
Yeah. The C-123, he had big windows in the cockpit. So we were, that was the deal. If we got hit on the ground, we're just going to bail out of the windows and just jump out. And, anyway, it was okay. But there were a lot of, we went to a lot of small unimproved airfields. And I landed in 73 different airfields in South Vietnam. I flew, I had over 1,000 hours of combat time, and I flew 1,320 sorties. So it was a busy year.
Yeah.
But a lot of it was, at least we thought it was pretty routine, a lot of it. So anyway.
Okay. What was the crew? What was like the, what did the crew of the C-123 consist of?
Yeah, most of the time we had a pilot, a co-pilot, a flight engineer, and a roadmaster.
Okay.
We would take on a navigator if we were doing an airdrop.
Okay. Yes, sir. Like dropping supplies in the air.
Yeah. They were bundles, basically.
Like resupplying troops in the field.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay. Did the plane have any armament? The C-123?
Yeah, it did. The pilot and the co-pilot had armor plating on the sides and then the seat and the back of the seat.
Okay. Yeah.
And when we went into some place like Quezon, where we knew we were going to get shot at, we'd wear a black vest. But
okay,
they were terribly uncomfortable, so I didn't wear it very often. So
yes, sir. Uh-huh. I guess you get hit.
Yeah, it's not like you're riding in an airliner, okay? We flew with the windows open, and it was, it was 95 degrees and 95% humidity over there all the time.
Wow.
So, but that's no, really, it's, there are a lot of, other air crews that flew aircraft that were unpressurized and they were uncomfortable, but that's
you had a little, yeah. Did the plane have any guns on it? The C-123 or?
No, it didn't. The model I flew didn't. Now there were some models, and I've never seen these. They were flying. I think they were flying out of Laos, and they had tubes in the floor of the aircraft where you could drop bombs through it.
Oh, wow. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I don't know anything about that aircraft, really. I've never seen one. So.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's really interesting. That's really neat. Might have to look into that.
Yeah, just search for C-123, and you'll come up with different versions of it.
Yes, sir.
So,
what were some of the, were those, what was it, Quezon, were those the most stressful, some of the most stressful missions you flew, or?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. I was too young and stupid to really get stressed out very much about any of it.
Yes, sir.
The the most stressful ones were when the weather was bad. And, you know, we didn't fly instrument procedures, okay? Because if you just didn't do that. I mean, they weren't available for the most part. So you'd take off and stay below the weather. And sometimes it drove you down like 100 feet above the ground. And
just the wind and everything?
Well, it's just that that's how low the weather was.
Ceilings were low. Yeah, so you just had to stay below it?
Yeah, now you could find a hole where you could climb up and get above it.
Uh-huh.
But you had to find a way to get back down through it. And
oh, yeah, it's a risk. That's a, yeah.
And so I did that one day. And it was a good airfield. It was a 3,500-foot aluminum matting airfield. That's what the material is made out of. It's a good airfield.
Yeah.
And I was on top. And the problem is, there wasn't anything like GPS, okay? So
yes, sir.
You'd take off from some place and you'd fly a course and timing for the distance, and then look for a place to let down through if you got above the weather. And I can remember doing this at some field over in the western part of the country. And I found a place, and I let down, and I got below the weather. And this was stressful. And I came in and landed, and I got out of the airplane, and this is a artillery base, and a couple of these 155-millimeter cannons went off, and I jumped about 10 feet in the air. That's why, if it was anyway, most of us would try and stay below the weather, even if it meant getting pretty far, pretty low. And keep in mind that we flew so much, we knew the whole country. I knew the country, like the back of my hand.
Yes, sir. After a while.
Yeah, I knew the terrain and everything, and we, I always carry a map. You just doesn't happen today. Is you just map read. It's like following a map in your car. But I had a chart that I plotted all the courses that went from every place to every place.
So okay. That
when I got out there, I didn't have to bother planning anything. I just knew, the field I was taking off from and where I was going. And I already had the course plotted, and I knew what to expect, and off we went. So.
Yes, sir.
Anyway.
And, I was kind of curious, what did y'all do during your free time? When you weren't, and it sounds like you're pretty busy with all the combat hours and all the sorties and the missions, but I was just curious, when you were on base or whatever, what you would do.
Well, first of all, I flew 2 out of every 3 days.
Okay.
When we are I spent the first 2 months at Nha Trang, and
okay,
it was probably a lovely city. When the French were there, and we stayed some villa downtown, and so it was within a couple blocks of the beach, so go to the beach, which was totally stupid because we didn't have any security, and I know there were bad guys running around that place, but we just weren't that bright. The place where we lived in this villa, We didn't have a security, but the next, about a half a block down, there was a building where all the Koreans stayed. And those guys didn't take prisoners. So we felt pretty safe being next to them.
Or who stayed there?
South Koreans.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So.
I was curious, like, did they grant y'all, like, leave to go and just kind of, because it sounds like you were able to go to the beach and such, or you said that you didn't have security, but I was just curious kind of how the procedure of that went, like, you know, when you weren't, you said you flew 2 out of the 3 days. I was curious, like, on the day off, like, if y'all were able to just kind of go about, and have leave to kind of go where you wanted, or how that worked.
Yeah, I mean, when we were in the train, I'd take walks around the city or go to the beach. But after 2 months, we were all consolidated at Tan Rang Air Base. And so the whole wing was there. That was a big base.
Okay.
And so there, when we weren't flying, we'd play tennis, or we'd go off the base. Everybody had a little motorbike and we'd ride around looking at stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I didn't do that much. Sit around and read. I had a Tan Rang. There were 6 of us in a plywood shack, basically, although it was air conditioned, which was really good.
Yeah.
And, so, you know, we'd be out and about and, around the base, the officers' club was up the street a little ways. You go up there and have your meals. And
okay. I forgot to ask you, like, what rank you were and everything.
Well, I was, when I went over there, I was a lieutenant. And halfway through my tour, I got promoted to captain. So.
Okay, yeah, wow. And I forgot to ask, like, who you flew with, like the squadron or what? I'm sorry, I'm trying to think of the term.
Well, I flew with a 310th Air Commando Squadron.
Okay, yes, sir.
And the squadron was part of the 315th Air Commando Wing.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Very cool.
So does that make sense? So, you know, a squadron.
Yes, sir. It's like a subunit of the wing, is what you said, right?
I mean, we think of it in terms of aircraft. It'd be maybe 12 to 16 aircraft. And
okay.
So and the crew ratio would probably be about 1.2. So probably 20 crews. And then there was consolidated maintenance. So there's separate maintenance squadrons that worked on airplanes.
Okay. Do you still talk to some of those guys from your squadron and everything?
No, I don't. We had a reunion a couple of years ago, so I got to see a couple of guys that I.
Oh, okay.
Served.
Yeah, good.
But we kind of went our own way though, for the most part, and
yes, sir.
So, that's just kind of how it was. So.
Yeah. I was curious, if you ever had to evacuate, you know, any wounded or anything like that, if you ever had to, try to, because you said you had various situations where you had, like you got the emergency call with the beginning of the Tet Offensive, and I was curious if you ever had to, you know, evacuate any personnel. I mean, I guess that would be more of a helicopter role, wouldn't it? But I was just, you know, wondering about that.
We had air evac missions, and we'd go pick people, pick them up, and take them to a hospital. We were in Saigon or up in the Trang. I remember I was at this airfield, doesn't matter where it was, but there was a South Korean on a stretcher on the ramp, and he was dying. And I didn't have permission to take this guy anywhere. So I said, put him on the airplane. I grabbed some Army corpsman, put him on the airplane to take care of him. And I flew up to the Trang where there was a Korean hospital. And fortunately, he was alive when I got off the airplane. Hopefully he survived.
Yeah.
But
yes, sir.
If he would, you know, sometimes you just do stuff. And but if this had it turned out bad, if he'd have been dead when he got off the airplane, that could have been an international incident. I don't know. But sometimes.
Oh, really? Because you weren't authorized to.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it.
Yes, sir. I mean, sounds like you did the right thing.
Yeah, so you got to take your chances, you know.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah, so anyway, everybody else in the squadron probably doesn't.
Yeah. Did they issue you a sidearm?
Yeah. I had a Smith & Wesson 38 revolver. I think it was a six-shot revolver. And then
double action, right?
Yeah, it was a double action revolver. It's a good weapon, actually. I didn't appreciate it back then because I thought I needed something with more firepower.
Uh-huh.
It was a fine weapon for what we needed, really.
It's and, reliable.
That's a good thing about revolvers. They don't break. And then we each carry an M16.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So.
That's interesting. I didn't know that pilots carried rifles. That's cool.
I got on an airplane. I put the M16 right behind my seat.
Wow. Okay. I didn't know that. I thought that, I knew the pilots typically got issued a, sidearm, revolver, pistol, but I didn't know that, yeah, that's cool.
So, yeah. Our strategy was that if we were shot down, we were going to stay with the aircraft and wait for somebody to rescue us.
Oh, yes, sir. Defend the aircraft.
So we'd just fight it out with a little fanny pack and had 250 rounds of ammo in it.
What had the 250 rounds?
250 rounds. Hey, listen, I'm going to go to the restroom. I'll be right back.
Okay, yes, sir. Sounds good. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Back again. So I carried a fanny pack with 250 rounds of ammo in it. And I guess that, you know, everybody did what they felt like doing is what boiled down to. So, you know, everybody kind of operated that way. So.
How many clips is 250 rounds? Is it a 20 round clip or how many bullets?
15.
15. Okay.
Yeah.
What happened? Did they let you keep it after the war, or did they make you give it back?
Oh no. All that was tightly controlled. You'd show up in the morning for a mission, and you go to the armory and check out your weapons and ammo.
Oh yes, sir. Okay, so it wasn't like if you were a Marine or whatever, where you just have that and it would be your rifle.
No, because you know we were on a base. It was
okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You couldn't. Yes.
So, yeah. At the end of the day, it check it back into the armory.
Okay. The what was I gonna say? When you returned home, and did anyone were you well received? Or, like, did anyone give you grief about serving in Vietnam? I we have a family friend served in Vietnam, and he tends to be pretty reserved about you know, his time in Vietnam. But he told us that people were very rude to him when he came home, and I was just curious about your experience with that.
Well, I didn't experience that. I know it happened a lot, but you know what I remember. I think I came back to McCord Air Force Base, and they got me a commercial flight back to Cincinnati, Ohio, where my wife was. So,
okay.
I didn't experience kind of a problem. And but I know some people did. But I also remember when I got back to McCord, I changed clothes. The travel the rest of the way on civilian airline. But,
yes, sir. Yeah.
But I didn't, you know, there wasn't any reason for that particularly.
Reason for what?
I didn't have any particular reason for changing clothes. I just would rather travel in civilian clothes.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I understand. I understand. It wasn't a matter of like, I don't know what people will say, or just
no.
You finally get to change back to civilian clothes. Yes.
Yeah. But today there's people are real complimentary about those of us that served in Vietnam. So,
that's good. Yes, sir. I'm glad that people appreciate it.
And the veterans are, they're held in pretty high esteem, I think, in the country today.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for your service.
Well, I'm just glad I could serve somebody like you. So that's what's important.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. The when were you? You said you returned home to your wife. Did you marry her before you went to Vietnam, or when were y'all married?
We were married about a month and a half after I got out of the Air Force Academy.
Okay.
And then we headed to Lubbock, Texas.
Okay, yeah, so she, yeah. And the, did you like write letters to her and whatnot?
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way we could communicate.
Yes, sir.
When I was in Vietnam was just letters. And it,
uh-huh.
Yeah, it was super snail mail. I mean, it'd take 2 weeks for a letter to arrive. And we also made tape recordings and sent them back and forth.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's true. I guess you could do that too.
Yeah. And so when I left, our little boy is 57 now, but anyway, he was he was 3 months old when I left.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that must have been hard.
Yeah, well, it was harder on my wife. She had to carry the load by herself. But
that's true. Yep.
She had she had good family support because she found a place to live in Cincinnati where, you know, both her parents and my parents lived. So she had a good support system.
Good. Yes, sir. Did some of your friends serve in Vietnam as well? Any of your friends from, I assume several of them from the Air Force Academy would have, but anyone you knew from high school or anything like that?
Oh, gosh. No, not that I can think of. I'm sure there was some, but it didn't ring a bell. No.
Yes, sir.
So,
I was curious, how did you, you met my grandfather through the Auxiliary Coast Guard, correct?
Yeah, Coast Guard Auxiliary. Yeah, Bob. Yeah.
Oh, no, Trace.
Oh, Trace. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Yes,
yeah.
sir. Uh-huh. Yes, he's such a funny guy.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
he does turtle watch, you know, where he finding the nests and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes, sir. Uh-huh. Yeah, the sea turtles come and, you know, bury all the eggs, and they mark off the zone where the nest is, and they count up all the eggs and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yes, sir. Do you know like the American Legion and different veteran things? I was curious if you were involved in any of that.
Well, I'm a member of the American Legion, but I really I'm not active in it.
Yes, sir.
So I support it and I get the magazine and there's the American Legion post about a block from where we live. I just have never gone over there.
That's in Niceville, right?
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are there multiple in Niceville or just one?
As far as I know, there's just one.
You know what's funny? I'm trying to think where it is. I can see it in my mind and I don't know what street it's on, but I used to when I was in middle school, I was in the Boy Scouts. And we would meet at that American Legion sometimes. They partnered with us. They would let us use it for some of our meetings. They would let us store some of our Boy Scout equipment, like the propane tanks and stuff. They would let us store it there. And so, you know, if we were getting ready to go on a camp out, we would all meet at the American Legion and we would, pack up all of our things. And
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, they're good people.
Yeah,
I never knew any of them well, but they seem very
involved
in the community and stuff.
Yeah, I enjoy their magazine, and but I'm not active in the local post here.
Yes, sir. I'm curious, how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
How old am I?
Yes, sir.
I'm 81.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you were what, 20, you said 26, I believe, when you were Pet Offensive?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very neat. Very neat.
Yeah.
So does, have you talked to, I assume my grandfather would have brought up the fact that he was a pilot with American Airlines, right?
Oh, yeah. He's got about 20,000 hours flying time.
Yeah, he's a lot. I didn't know the specifics. I think he said it was about 3 years. I think. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's right or if I'm mistaken, but
that's probably right.
Yeah, he said it's about 3 years in the air.
Yeah.
That blows my mind. That's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's like.
No, he's got a lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So you continued to fly when you you were in Vietnam, you were like stationed in Vietnam for a year.
Yeah.
And then you came home and you were at a different airbase, not the one in Texas. I forget. I believe you said, I'm trying
it
to remember.
Charleston Airport.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And you were there for how long?
Four years,
I think you said?
A little over 3 years.
Okay. So you continued to, but you said you flew missions that were still in Vietnam, right? Like you would fly from there to, you said there to a different place and then to Japan and then, right?
Yeah. We had our missions were typically from Charleston up the coast to McGuire Air Force Base, where we'd get a load and then we'd fly to Elmendorf in Alaska.
Oh,
and
wow, okay.
We'd get off the airplane, a new crew would pick it up and continue on to Yokota, and just outside of Tokyo. And another,
okay.
They'd give the airplane up to another crew who'd fly it.
Okay, yeah.
One,
so you just fly, like...
Thailand or Vietnam and back. And anyway, it was a stage system.
Yeah, so you flew the first leg of it or whatever.
Yeah, the airplane kept moving, but the people didn't move with it, so.
Uh-huh, yes, sir. So did you ever fly into Vietnam after you were stationed in Vietnam? Like, did you ever fly the other legs of the journey, or did y'all always pass it off to another crew and then to the third crew?
No, I flew fairly often into Vietnam.
Okay, yes, sir. Okay, that's, yes.
Yeah.
When did you stop flying? Like, when was your last, like, Vietnam mission that went into Vietnam? Like, when did you stop flying into Vietnam altogether?
Sometime in 1971, I guess, May or June, because that's, I left the flying business for a while to go to graduate school.
Okay, so. Yeah. What did you study in graduate school?
Aeromechanical engineering.
Okay. Yes, sir. That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
So your first mission was your first you called them sorties, didn't you? You said you flew something.
I had 1,320 sorties. Okay, so what's that sound like? That what it looks like is on a given day I'd fly 7 or 8 sorties.
Oh wow, okay.
And that would basically equal a mission. Okay, that's just the way they kept score.
So the 7 or 8 would equal a mission.
Yeah, so you know what you would do is you'd show up at the operations building, and they'd give you an itinerary that you were going to fly. And
okay.
It would have 7 or 8 different stops on it. And,
okay. Yeah.
So.
And then in total, yes, sir. Okay, I understand. Yes, sir. I wasn't familiar with the term sortie, but yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So you said from about so 67 to 71 was when you flew in Vietnam.
Yeah, not.
But you're only stationed in there from around a year.
Right.
Yes, sir.
The rest of the time, I usually go into Vietnam once a month, maybe twice. There were other places in Southeast Asia that needed the support, a couple of bases in Thailand and the Philippines and Okinawa.
Okay.
Wow,
Okinawa. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, today that's the Philippines. It didn't used to be that, but
so much has changed in that Southeast Asia.
Well, it should have been part of the Philippines. Okinawa should have been part of the Philippines a long time ago.
I'm trying to remember what happened to it.
Well, it's, you know, it's just like another territory of Japan.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Yes, that's right. And how long did you continue to fly with the Air Force after you said 71 was around the last you flew in Vietnam? Did you continue to fly with the Air Force, or was that about the last?
No, in 71, I went back to graduate school, which is, and when I got out of graduate school, I was a test manager, Military Airlift Command headquarters. When I was there, I'd fly once.
What'd you say? A test manager?
Yeah, operational test manager.
Okay. Yes, sir.
So, you know, for any new equipment we were going to buy, I would test it. And in that capacity, I'd fly once or twice. It was just, they were just proficiency flights. It was
okay.
Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah. When did you retire?
1996.
Wow. Yes, sir. It's a long career. That's awesome.
Well, 32 years plus the time at the Air Force Academy. So.
Yeah, I'm trying to think how long my grandfather flew. Somewhere around the same time frame, I think. Yeah.
Now, I'll tell you what, he flew more years than I did. I'm pretty certain of that.
I think he may have done 39, now that I think about it. I think. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong. He loved it. He loved it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they make him retire. As a matter of fact, I don't think he wanted to.
Now, how old is he, you know?
Oh, I'm trying to think. I think they made him retire at 65. I don't think they let him fly past that.
Yeah, it might have been earlier than that. I think now they'd make him retire at 62.
Really? I could be wrong. It might be 62. I might be mistaken. I'm not sure. I knew they made him retire. In fact, I didn't know that they did this until he was telling me about it, but on the very last flight he ever flew, when he lands, they spray the plane. There's fire trucks there that like spray the plane with the, you know, the water.
Yeah.
Kind of like a celebratory tradition, you know.
Yeah.
He's been all over the place. He's been all over the place. That.
Yeah.
He lived in Antarctica for a year, actually.
Really?
I'm serious.
Was he at the North or South Pole?
South Pole, yes, sir. For a year.
National Science Foundation.
I think that was before he started working with American Airlines. I'm pretty sure that was in college, as part of like a research thing that he was at the South Pole for that year.
Well, he would have been assigned to the National Science Foundation. That's the only outfit that works on the South Pole. So unless he was,
that's not,
there's a, oh, for, I've landed I've been in this field. I can't remember the name of it now.
The one at the South Pole?
Yeah, it's actually on the Ross Ice Shelf.
Oh, wow.
Not all the way on the South Pole.
Yeah.
But I was there. I wouldn't fly in the airplane. My boss was, but we landed there and then got a real neat ride on Navy helicopters all over the place. It was fascinating.
Yeah. I would love to get to. Yeah. I haven't been able to travel much in my life, and I hope to travel some. I hope to be able to see some more of the world.
Well, I've been in 53 different countries.
Wow.
And I've flown around the world twice.
Really?
Your grandfather's probably done more than that.
That's awesome though. That's so cool. The I was curious on a different note, if you happen to have any pictures that you'd be willing to share with me of you or the aircraft or just any pictures in that time frame, because we're supposed to, you know, compile like a project for our for our Vietnam War class. So if you had any pictures that you'd be willing to share with me that you could send to me, I'd really appreciate that.
I can do that. I got a bunch of them.
Yes, sir. And you don't need to find them right now. I just mean like after you get off, just sometime, you know, if you're free, if you wouldn't mind finding a few of those, I'd really appreciate that.
No, it's easy. They're on my phone. I'll just ship them to you.
Yes, sir. Okay. Okay. If you have them digital, that's even better. If you wouldn't. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any pictures of, honestly, if you have any, I'm trying to think. So you said, do you have anything like physical? Like, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something that you might, you know what I mean? Like if you have anything that you brought back from Vietnam that you have a picture of or anything like that too, anything like that would work.
No, I don't think I do.
Yes, sir.
I used to have a Mountain Yard crossbow, but I finally got rid of that.
Okay. Yeah, that's a yes, sir. If you yeah the those pictures if you'd
yeah
at some point I'd really appreciate it. Yeah.
I can send the pictures. I'll tell you, I had a lot of memorabilia, and I finally got tired of carrying it around, got rid of it all. Actually, some guy had a museum he was starting, so I got all that.
Oh, okay.
Gave it to him.
Yeah, that's a good thing to do. Yeah.
So.
Yes, sir.
But,
well, I won't take up any more of your time. Thank you once again. Thank you very much for your willingness to let me call you and just, you know, for sharing some of your story with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm glad to do it. Wish you the best.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yep. You have a good evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.